Today is International Day to End Obstetric Fistula, and 5 days from now, on the 28th of May, we will be marking World Menstrual Hygiene Day. Now, these are important issues that we want to talk about today, and we want to look at these issues that are important for the health of women and girls. Girls and women's lives can be immensely improved by promoting health solutions and reducing stigma around menstrual hygiene and health. Now, we want to demystify what obstetric fistula is, and we want to talk about the importance of menstrual hygiene. And in the studio, we have Modong Manuela, Gender, Youth and Women Health Practitioner working with AMREF Health Africa. And from the Minister of Health, we have Reverend Janet Michael, who is a Director for Nursing and Midwifery at the National Ministry of Health. Good morning, ladies. Thank you so much for making our time to speak to us.
Good morning, Irene. It's a pleasure to be here.
Right. So I will start with you, Reverend. Today is International Day to End Obstetric Fistula, and we would like to understand what we are talking about here. Tell us more about this obstetric fistula.
Yeah, good morning to you, Irene, and to our listeners. The issue of obstetric fistula, of course, is a very big concern. When a fistula creates, we say it's a near-miss death. Normally, it occurs when the mother had gone through prolonged labor, and normally because it's obstructed labor, the baby cannot come out. The baby is either too big for the passage, or the baby, the mother is having a contracted pelvis. Therefore, during the descent, the head rubs between the area, either between the bladder and the vagina.
Right.
And normally, then it creates a hole. Of course, there are several types of fistulas which are created. The most common one is the vesico-vaginal fistula, whereby the hole which is created, it depends. It may be small leakage, it may be more. So the urine that leaks through the vagina continuously. And of course, when that leaking occurs, normally you find that this mother, the baby is already dead. Most of the time. And when it is discovered later, she found that there was a leakage.
Right.
And of course, that is one type of the fistula. The other can be on
before you go to the other. So that leakage, is it because at that time the bladder has been affected?
Yes, there is a puncture between the uterus and the bladder. So there is a hole.
Right.
Which is the fistula, which means a hole.
Oh, yes. So fistula is a hole.
Fistula means a hole.
Right.
And then the urine, instead of her passing the urine there, there is a urine that is leaking from the bladder to the vagina. And can maybe small drops, maybe more, depending on the size of the fistula. So you find most of the time, most of these women is first time delivery, first time pregnancy. They are prima gravidas, they are young, and most of the time due to prolonged labor, and this occur, of course.
So you were going to the second type before I interrupted you.
The other one is also can be two. You can have, but it's not a very common one. Where also from the back to the bowel, there is another one. So you have feces leaking also.
Yes. Wow.
That one is not very common.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not very common.
Right.
But
right.
can be very bad.
Yes. Manuela, is there a way this can be avoided?
Yes, definitely. Mm. And obstetric fistula is actually preventable. And I mean, just like Reverend Janet mentioned, it's due to the prolonged obstetric labor.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, it's basically shows us a tip of iceberg of the poor quality care that we have. And there are a lot of contributing factors as to why we have so many young girls and women are having this condition. Right. When you look at it, it's more of like limited knowledge, access to healthcare in time, the weak referral systems that we have, and of course culture and society and other factors contribute. And basically from what Reverend Janet said is this happens to most women in the rural settings whereby, you know, there are poor health systems and others tend to probably deliver at home or other so many conditions contribute to that. But I think the overall, there are a lot of prevention measures that we're looking at. One is doing a lot of awareness, letting the community know that it's important that you go for the ANC so that the health workers ascertain, you know, the type of when you will deliver and, you know, just prepare you for the labor period.
Yeah.
And again, it's also very important for both young girls and women to actually deliver from the facility because then these issues can also be dealt with, because if the baby is too big to pass through, then there is the option of, you know, a cesarean section.
Right.
So many other options could come to ensure that you deliver.
So that can be seen beforehand that the baby is big and it cannot pass.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, you know, one of the great contributing factors to obstetric fistula is the issue of child marriage and early pregnancy. Just like Reverend said, it's common among the young girls because obviously their reproductive, you know, growth is not to the full capacity that we expect.
Yeah.
So you find that in most of the cases that we've registered in the different campaigns, you find we have so many girls below 18 years and you know, downwards, basically having this condition.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Manuela. And Reverend, looking at the context where we have so many young girls being married off, how big of a problem is fistula in South Sudan?
Actually, at the moment, we have not yet estimated how much, though at one stage it was estimated to be about 6,000.
Yes.
People suffering with it, and of course when we look at it, as Emanuela has said, one, if these mothers are coming for antenatal care, one of the earliest detection is to find out some of those which you can see that they are having problem, for example contracted pelvis, then they can be put on a care that is, they are called the risk mothers. So the risk mothers can be identified. And of course the others, it later appeared, but normally if ultrasound is done, certain exemption, they can actually find out that the baby is too big to pass through that pelvis. And for them to come immediately as they start labor, to be in hospital. But what you are having is that these mothers sometimes are held by the elder women who thinks that every woman must deliver vaginally.
Yeah.
And so they keep them at home.
Yeah.
They say, don't run to the hospital. They will do a cesarean section. Deliver at home. So the fear is the cesarean section. Oh, no, you must not be operated.
Yeah.
Deliver at home. By the time they reach the hospital,
it's too late.
They have already spent 3 days. And these ones are lucky because with obstructed labor, when it's so severe, you might either have ended up with a ruptured uterus, which, of course, kills you immediately. Yeah. That's why we say anybody who develops a fistula is a miss.
Has survived death.
Death.
Yeah.
It's a miss death.
Yeah.
So here is where we have a, for example, you actually see girls. I mean, I call them girls, 16-year-old. One time we found a 16-year-old, you know, and you really find that there is very miserable, very miserable.
Right.
Because when this happened, their husbands abandoned them immediately.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Right.
They abandoned them.
Yeah. And about the contracted pelvis, is it possible for one to know that their pelvis is contracted? Like that they will not be able to go through natural labor, or is that determined at the hospital?
It's determined at the hospital
during labor.
You cannot know because some are marginal.
Yeah,
and depends on the baby. What we call the passage. And the passenger.
The baby, in this case, being the passenger.
Passing through that passage.
Okay.
So, with the, just one thing that I want to bring out is that, you know, we have always said nutrition is very important. When girls that, I mean both boys and girls, when there is malnutrition, it affects the girl more because later the reproductive growth of the pelvis, bone already were affected.
Right.
And this is why they say improve nutrition so that the children grow well, including boys and girls.
Mm.
But at the end, it is the girls who are affected and developing a contracted pelvis. Not, of course, not every contracted pelvis is malnutrition, but it's a common factor.
Right, right. Thank you so much, Reverend. Now, Modong, in your work with AMREF, I'm sure you work with the communities. Are attitudes changing in terms of people coming for antenatal care?
Yeah, greatly. And I mean, I think South Sudan is on a great journey in terms of us embracing skilled birth attendants, going to the facilities and all that. And I think it's because of the great work from the ministries of health and the partners that we have in terms of the meaningful engagements that are there with the community. You see a lot of engagements with communities to just, you know, let communities know that it's good to have ANC. And again, most of the partners are actually now doing what we call community safe motherhood outreaches. They actually go to the communities, have awareness on ANC, register even first-time mothers who've never gone to the facility, give them cards and then do their referrals.
Right.
And these are done, of course, with the nurses and midwife support.
Mm.
So for me, I see great change. And again, even the statistics has it. When you look at the statistic that the National Ministry has, you see ANC reach out per quarter, reaching like 5,000 from our, for example, from Juba Teaching Hospital. Just last quarter, I think we had about 4,000 something mothers coming for ANC. So I think there's great improvement compared to the previous years.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, Reverend, at the end of this month, we will be marking a menstrual hygiene day. Just tell us about the importance of menstrual hygiene.
Thank you. Menstrual hygiene is very, very important. It's very, very important. And for the girls to be oriented earlier, before they start their menstruation.
Mm.
And of course, their hygiene plays a very important part. Because when you look at this period, when there is menstruation, the chances of infection are very high. And when we look at the female anatomy, the urethra is very short, which is also near the vagina. They are all. If there is no proper hygiene, you will have a urinary tract infection.
Yep.
And, of course, you will have also infection, vaginal infection, which later can become very bad. Therefore, hygiene is really very, very important.
Right.
That the washing, that you are having your sanitary pads and changing them, also not keeping them for too long.
Right.
So hereby, you need water. You need your sanitary pads.
Right. So you speak about orientation. People with girls in the families, daughters, when should they start? When should the talk about menstruation start?
They should start earlier because we are seeing now girls having menstruation at the age of 9.
Mm. Wow.
So here, maybe we need to start
as early as 7.
As early as 8.
Yeah.
Maybe trying to discuss about it because the pattern is changing. The pattern is changing that now the age is lowering. And this is so dangerous when we see these young girls because right now we had the earliest pregnancy we had in South Sudan is 10 years.
Wow.
And other places had 9.
Yeah.
And this was in Kenya recorded. South Sudan has recorded 10 years. So as this pattern is changing, it's also creating another issue for us with having the early pregnancy. So therefore, we need to start talking. Actually, schools, primary schools, for example, the teachers need to start giving them the awareness as early as possible.
Primary schools. And I think even at home, we don't shy away from the topic.
At home, the mothers take them through. Even you don't want to talk, but you just have pictures and say, this is what happened.
Be creative,
Be creative and show them the pictures of what is going to happen. And then you've got to do this. I remember this girl who was 8 years, she came home and told her mother, had said, I would like to have always. And her mother said, why do you need always? Said, in case my period comes. My
menstruation. Oh, she knew about it before even the mother.
They have already talked about it at school. So she comes and she tells the mother to buy her this thing. And the mother was saying, my small girl, 8 years old, is asking you to buy for her. Always. And she already knows that it's called always.
And Manuela, why are these topics very hard to talk about in our families?
No, I think compared to previous years, it's now, it's becoming open.
We're loosening up,
Yeah, people are not shy from it. And I think school has played a great role so far in terms of starting these conversations and letting parents know. But I think it's very important to onboard both men as well and boys, because again we have families whereby it's basically fathers and
single men, fathers, single fathers
and all that. And also again we need to remember society still, it's the men who are the decision makers, you know, the breadwinners in many ways. So again, as much as women we should open up, again we also need to allow our fathers and uncles to start the conversation to talk to the
daughters.
And I think great emphasis is basically from the government to support this agenda of menstrual hygiene in terms of ensuring that the products that are to support, you know, women at a cost that they can afford, because it's a challenge that we are facing.
And it should be tax-free.
It should be tax-free, possibly for free, not even tax-free.
Yeah. Because when Reverend was speaking about when you're using your pad, you need to change, and I'm thinking how many of them can actually afford it?
And it's now 1,500, so not everyone can afford. So again, you know, during the 3 days or 5 days, you being in your menstrual period, that's like 3,000 for some mothers, depending on the flu. You might find some parents may not, and a girl is supposed to stay home instead of going to school. So it's a challenge, and I think the government needs to come on full board to ensure that.
Right, and speaking about challenges, Manuela, what are some of those challenges that women and girls face accessing menstrual hygiene products, apart from, of course, them being expensive?
Yeah, that, and I think also the quality of the products that are coming in country, the good ones are very, very expensive. You find them in the supermarkets, and the ones that are there at a low cost. And I know we've recorded stories in the schools where kids are saying, you know, these, they're itching and all that. But of course, we're encouraging them that you can also make the reusable products. Again, our fear is the maintenance and the hygiene attached to the reusable products that are there. Again, you see, not all shops are everywhere. You go just not far, Rock On, and you find there are no shops that have pads. So you might find the pads are just within the urban setting. Far ends, they are not there. Girls have to find their own means to access the products.
Right. Yeah. Ladies, thank you so much for making your time to speak to us today. And before I let you go, final remarks, Reverend.
My final remarks is for our young girls to access antenatal care. They should be coming. And when delivery comes, they should come to the facility, the earliest when it starts. And of course, for menstrual hygiene, that is of course a challenge where we said we'll need our government support. And of course, the Ministry of Gender and Social Welfare, where this one also falls on them, and the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Youth, to look at the importance of hygiene, supplying free sanitary
pads, towels,
pads or towels, so that every girl can access it.
Right. Thank you, madam.
Yeah, thank you, Irene. And not just to repeat what Reverend Janet has said, I think I want to emphasize to the public that once you have fistula, just it has been mentioned, they're looking, it's treatable. There are repairs that are ongoing in country. Of course, it's not routine, but there are certain campaigns that we hear of. There is obstetric fistula campaign whereby an opportunity is given to those who have this condition to be repaired so that they can go back, you know, to living their normal life. I know that there are a lot of outcomes when you have fistula, the low productivity, not doing your usual things, but there is an opportunity to be able to repair, and it's important that you reach to Juba Teaching Hospital, your different facilities in your area, to be part of the books, to be in the registration book of those who would want to be repaired, so that once the campaigns come, you can be called and then you are supported in that area. And then I think for me, lastly, on menstrual hygiene is to say it's a collective responsibility that starts from the family to community to the top, to ensure that we support all women and girls to ensure that they live a dignified life.
Madam Manuela and Reverend Janet Michael, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. And Manuela is a gender, youth and women health practitioner working with AMREF Health Africa. Reverend Janet Michael is a director for nursing and midwifery at the National Ministry of Health.